faster than I think it needs to.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Health and Human Services Finance Division to order. Members, we're going to start today with House File 1, which we heard already extensively, but at the time we heard it, we did not have a fiscal note. So we do have the fiscal note now. It was emailed out to members sometime last night. So Representative Pinto is here, and I think, Representative Pinto, would you do you want to just tell us about the fiscal note, or do you want to have Mr. Berg talk to us about the fiscal note?
Madam Chair, I'm happy to just orient folks, and obviously if there are questions, Mr. Berg will be in a good position to answer, but I may be able to just sort of give a high-level sense with your permission.
Sure. Well, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So members, you'll recall that House File 1 contains a series of appropriations to accomplish various tasks, and not surprisingly, the fiscal note reflects those appropriations. It's quite a lengthy note because there's a lot that we're attempting to accomplish in the bill to address these two crises and opportunity gaps and in the child care crisis. Really, the one twist in it, and it turns out not to be unexpected, is that our state, you may be aware, is out of compliance with federal requirements regarding the child care assistance programs. There's a requirement that we reimburse providers at a rate of the 25th percentile of the most recent market survey. Accomplishing that minimum federal compliance is included in the bill. It's sort of a separate point than some of the rest of the bill, but is included in there. And in the tails, there is a cost of $60 million associated with that. I say that's not unexpected because we knew that there was that cost. We're actually expecting, if the federal government continues to provide funding as it has in the last few years, that that actually would be fully covered by federal funds in future years. But learned just a week ago that MMV is not allowing it to be counted in that way. So there is a $60 million additional cost on top of the $500 million appropriated. Otherwise, it's the $500 million that is sitting in House File 1, the series of numbers in there.
All right. And Representative Katiza Watoon is also here, and she is the author of the bill. And Representative Katiza Watoon, welcome. Do you want to say anything in addition, just on the fiscal note?
No. Sorry, I was a little bit behind, Madam Chair. I was anticipating we were going later on in the session.
No, that's quite all right. I wasn't commenting on that at all. I just didn't see you before, so I wanted to give you an opportunity if you want to speak to anything in addition, you know, please.
I appreciate that. I think Chair Pinto did a great job kind of giving a little bit of an overview, and if it's all right with you, Madam Chair, we'd have Mr. Berg walk us through the fiscal note or answer questions.
Yeah, I think we could just take questions then, and I think Mr. Berg can just be here for questions.
Wonderful.
Because even though there, as you said, Chair Pinto, there's a lot in it, but it isn't that, it's nothing that complicated. Even though there's a lot to read through here, but that's because there are a lot of different pieces to the bill. So are there questions from members? Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the top of the fiscal note there, it says that it's still preliminary. Is it still preliminary, or is that just the drafting?
Mr. Burke?
Madam Chair, maybe just a couple of technical comments that might come up with this. It is still a preliminary note, the reason being that the Department of Education has not responded yet. They will get in at some point, but their section doesn't impact the sections that this committee cares about, health and human services. And I'll just note one other technical thing, which is because of the timing on this note, it uses November forecast data. We've asked DHS to update the note for February forecast data. So at some point it'll come back. The numbers will be slightly different. I wouldn't anticipate them being greatly different because the February forecast was about as close to a static forecast of November as you can get. And in fact, I believe the MFIP general fund costs and the TANF costs went down very slightly in each year. So there will be a note that comes back that's finished that will be very slightly different than this, but that's why it's preliminary.
Representative Schumacher?
That's it.
Okay, Representative Haley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. My question is, it's a significant dollar amount, and it's pretty expansive what you're trying to do, and I appreciate that. But I'm wondering if you can speak to this as, you know, one-time money with this budget surplus is what you're targeting, as a down payment, in your own words. What happens next? How do we address ongoing funding? And my concern is we're setting ourselves up then to potentially in a different biennium have a budget cut to these programs that you care so much about. So I can't match those two in my brain, if you can give me your thoughts on it.
And if I could, just before you answer that, Representative Pinto, I have a pretty clear memory that you answered the very same question the last hearing or something very close. So I think it is an important question, but if you could kind of keep that brief, and then, you know, we're going to, because we did give the bill a full hearing, we're going to try to stick the fiscal note itself. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Haley. I guess one thing that I'll point out, right, is that if the need is there, then it seems like being able to meet the need in the shorter term, but even if you thought we couldn't in the longer term, that doesn't seem like a good reason not to meet the need in the short term, I'll just point out. I should note that as it turns out, the funding we're putting in actually does spread out more than 1 year. It actually does, as this is being put together, it actually does spread out into the following year, and I think maybe even the year after that, if you look in this. So it actually does extend out a ways. But this does, you know, this is a recognition that we have these two really significant crises that we've thought of as being separate, the crisis in every one of our districts in child care, squeezing parents and employers and everyone else, and then also the opportunity gaps. And so, to a certain extent, we are setting up an expectation that then we'll have to meet. But I think in our view, that's an expectation that we should be meeting. And so, and why would we not take this step now? If we can help the children in the next year, 18 months, and have a huge impact then, why would we not have that impact on their lives, even if we couldn't extend it, which, of course, we certainly should.
Representative Haley, other questions? Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I've got, during the interim, I talked to two of my longtime daycare providers. Both of them have become frustrated with the parent aware system and decided not to participate. And I think it's star ratings, if I remember right, 5-star, 5-4-3-2-1. And my understanding is the lower your rating, the less reimbursement that you get. And if somebody doesn't participate, how are they discriminated against as far as reimbursement on this program?
And once again, do you want to, Mr. Berg, can you respond?
Madam Chair, it might be helpful because this came up before, and it might be a little bit in your perception of it. The rate that is set in law is the rate all providers get. Then there is statute that says for parent awares that are, I believe, 4-star or 3-star,
they get
a bump in statute above the rate. So everybody gets the rate, which is the rate the state sets. But if you're 3 or 4-star, you get an add-on to the rate.
Yeah.
Representative Grunhagen.
That's where I have my concerns. So just wanted that clarification. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a comment now with the fiscal note in front of us that we've commented on the size of the fiscal note, but there is a real cost for not doing anything. I have one of the largest CCAP providers in Duluth is in my district, and they're worried that they're even going to be able to continue to have CCAP families being accepted into their daycare to be able to make ends meet. So, yes, this is something we need to continue to invest in, but there's a cost in not doing even this one-time investment.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? All right. So, actually, I think we have to have a motion to take it from the table, do we not? Mr. Chung? Okay, so we don't. It's just still in the possession of the committee. Okay. So, in other words, I think was I the maker of the motion in the beginning?
Yes.
Okay, so in other words, as the maker of the motion, the chair will renew my motion that House File 1, as amended, be recommended to.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, and okay. So, Ms. Edenhofer is telling me I have to say I'm taking it from the table. So I have lifted it from the table. And I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You, Madam Chair,
Thank
members.
You.
All right, I think Representative Morrison is here. And so let's. Are we? So. Okay, so Representative Morrison, we are waiting, and members, we are, the fiscal note is in duplicating. So it will hopefully be here during the hearing. Now, members, this is a bill that we heard last year. And from my understanding is that the fiscal note is being updated but isn't substantially different. The other two bills that we're going to hear today are also bills that we heard last year. So, but Representative Morrison, why don't you go ahead and present the bill and... You know, we're not going to move any bills out without fiscal notes, obviously, and without giving members a chance to look at the fiscal notes. But, you know, please go ahead and tell us about this bill. And it's, you know, one I remember fondly from last year.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1535 provides Medicaid coverage for home environmental assessments and for durable medical equipment to treat poorly managed asthma in children. Asthma is a cruel disease. At its worst, it involves attacks of acute breathing difficulties. It often requires intense respiratory treatment and ongoing medications. Anyone who has witnessed or experienced an acute asthma attack knows the terror it can induce, especially for children and their parents. Asthma continues to be a big problem for Minnesota kids, and it touches every corner of our state. About 7% of Minnesota kids have asthma, and 25% of those children have asthma that's poorly controlled. This is also a health equity issue. Minnesota children living in low-income communities are more likely than children living in higher-income communities to have been hospitalized for asthma. American Indian and African American students are more likely to be diagnosed with asthma. The interventions proposed by this bill, health education combined with in-home inspections and allergen-reducing products, have been shown to reduce asthma symptom days by 21 per year, reduce missed school days by 7 per year, and reduce acute health care visits to the ER, urgent care, and unscheduled office visits. This bill will provide a solution to help reduce the impacts of asthma on Minnesota children. Everyone wins. Children with asthma, their families, healthcare providers, insurers, and taxpayers. I do have one testifier who I'm hoping is here. Great. Jim Yarnally, Program Supervisor for Lead and Healthy Homes, Ramsey County Environmental Health. Thanks for being here.
All right. And Representative Morrison, before we get to the testifier, first of all, the chair will move House File for 1535. recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. And there is an amendment, I believe, and that is the 0671 amendment that's in the packet?
That's correct.
Is that your amendment, and would you like to have that moved?
Yes, please.
Okay, so... The chair will move the 0671 amendment to put the bill in the order in which the author would like to discuss it. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails. So now we have the bill before us, and we have it amended. And I think as I'm looking at the amendment, it just updates the dates, I believe.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. So thank you. So to your testifier, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Jim Yannarelli. I supervise the Lead and Healthy Homes Program for St. Paul Ramsey County Public Health. We have been conducting lead We've been conducting home assessments using a public health nurse and an environmental health specialist for many years. It has worked extremely well. We look forward to assisting other agencies in Minnesota to implement what we have learned. The supporters of this House File 1535 have asked me to briefly share some of our findings on return on investment. Referrals for our programs come from hospitals, clinics, school nurses, public health nurses. These children generally have poorly managed asthma and live in housing that has many environmental issues that trigger asthma symptoms. Our protocol involves a team assessment with a public health nurse sitting down with the child and the family to discuss their personal situation, asthma action plan, medication, etc., while the environmental health specialist assesses the homes to determine likely sources triggering the child's asthma symptoms. Following our process, families typically receive a vacuum cleaner, a small air cleaner for the child's bedroom, mattress and pillow encasement covers, cleaning kit, food storage kit, maybe mouse traps, maybe a furnace filter. And it might surprise you that the leading environmental source that exacerbates a child's asthma is simple household dust and pet dander, yet well under 50% of the families we visit have a working vacuum cleaner. One prime example of our savings is Ramsey County's average cost is under $600 per assessment intervention. When we compare that to one of our typical 911 calls from the community involving an asthma crisis from a family, that gets four firefighters in a ladder truck quickly respond to the address. They're followed by a medic rig with four additional firefighters. The medics will likely transport the parent and the child to Regents Hospital. Regents emergency room staff will admit the child and treat them. The cost of this is well over $3,000. So obviously, if our $600 prevents one or more of these, there's a substantial savings to our healthcare system. More importantly, the trauma that is avoided by the family cannot be measured. And it's not an isolated incident. This happens over and over, and we have been very effective in reducing these in Ramsey County. The healthcare industry has been very good at treating children's symptoms in clinics and providing medication, but targeting the sources of these problems in the home environment and eliminating and reducing these triggers has been badly overlooked and is a missed opportunity at saving a great deal of money for our healthcare system. And finally, this bill is not pilot program. It's not based on ideas and visions. This is an approach that's been successful. It's evidence-based. It saves money, and it should be implemented throughout Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. So, members, we have gotten the fiscal note. It's not a really long one, but members can certainly be looking at that. But in the meantime, are there any questions for Mr. Iannarelli or for the author? Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a general question on how this competitive business bidding process occurs today, because you're not creating one, you're just adding products to that, as far as I understand. Is the requests for proposal or requests for quotes made public so that they're under scrutiny, or is that information just held within the agency? Does anybody know if that's House Research or?
So that might be a DHS question. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. Giogo Hayes with the Department of Human Services. To answer your question, Representative, any of the provisions in here, if we were to contract, would follow the regular state of Minnesota procurement process. So it would be public, the RFP would be out, all those pieces would take place.
Okay.
And Representative Munson?
So my question is, when you're doing volume-based purchasing for specific products, is it, if you're going to be making a volume-based purchase, the idea is that you would, you know, buy one specific product in bulk to lower the cost, which I agree with, but does doing this limit the choices for the patients, is the choice for the patients limited in any way through this program, and are we going to be restricting the products that patients can choose?
Would you say your name again? I'm sorry.
Giogo Hayes.
Hayes.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair and Representative, so this was some technical assistance that the department provided a couple years ago. This bill's been around for a while. And the reason we offered it is, first I'll note that this section is a may, so it doesn't require the department does it. It's an optional piece. We were thinking that because of the number of children with asthma that meet the specific requirements in this bill might be so small that it might be hard to get providers all over the state to carry the products. And so given that, we said it might be worth putting this language in here, because if we're having trouble getting providers to carry it, we could maybe do a contract, have one provider that could do this statewide. Clearly, these having these products quickly is beneficial, but if there's a slight delay in shipping, it's better to get them the products than to not have a provider that's carrying it. So that was the intent of the language.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Other questions from members? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. So I just want to thank the author for bringing this forward. I recently met with two of our county nurses that were going into homes in the Duluth area to address asthma, and they convinced me that if we could get that covered, those the equipment to address the events that were triggering the asthma, that we could save significant amounts of money from preventing ER visits and hospitalizations and actually getting the asthma under control and reversing it. So I think this is a great bill that people should support. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Schultz. Just, since we just got the, you know, the fiscal note here, does anyone want Mr. Burke to kind of walk us through the fiscal note, even though it's not a complicated one, just to give members a chance to really look through it? I'm not seeing any takers for that, Mr. Burke, so I guess not. Are there any other questions from members? All right, not seeing any. I was really very regretful that we weren't able to do this last year. We had it in our omnibus bill, and I've just brought it up many times in different settings as an example of something where we really have good evidence for something that really works, that it actually saves money in the back end. One thing we haven't talked about too much today is just how horrible it is for a child to have asthma. And the testifier described kind of the emergency response, and even that, when you're a child, how scary must that be? All those ambulances and being rushed to the hospital and all of that stuff. And if we can avoid some of that trauma for kids, and we can avoid the trauma of having them gasping for air as many times, I think that's, it's all just great. There are so few things that we get to do that have as much immediate impact as this appears to have. So thank you very much for bringing the bill back to us, Representative Morrison. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1535, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Adelson. So, let's see. And this one's, where is this one? All right, so the chair will move House File 331 to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And Representative Adelson, I understand there is an amendment in the packet.
Yes, Madam Chair, the A14,
okay.
It updates areas of statute from last session.
Okay, so the chair will move the A14 amendment to get the bill in the shape in which the author would like to have it discussed. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. So the bill is before us as amended, and go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have a, I'm breathing. My little notes here. I want to thank my co-authors, Democrats and Republicans from all over Minnesota. Last year's bill was heard in HHS policy, commerce, judiciary, and HHS finance as well. It was included in your omnibus bill, and I want to thank you, Chair, for that. But it didn't make it to the final compromise. It's past time we get this done. I'm happy to report that the companion was passed out of the Senate Judiciary just last week. When I last presented this bill in this committee, less than a year ago, we had 28 Tobacco 21 communities in Minnesota. We are now up to 65 communities, and the federal tobacco age has been increased to 21, and new polls show that 74% of Minnesotans are in favor of Tobacco 21. A lot has changed over the past year, but to respect the committee's time today, I'll focus on two key items related to this bill.
First, why Minnesota needs to pass its own Tobacco 21 law, and second, what the fiscal note is for. In December, President Trump signed Tobacco 21 into federal law. The FDA directed retailers nationwide to immediately implement the change. But enforcement of this law happens at the federal, state, and local levels. That's why our own Tobacco 21 is necessary here in Minnesota. In Minnesota and other states, the immediate federal Tobacco 21 implementation confused retailers, with some saying they will not comply until the age is updated at the state level. Local reports confirm many are not complying. In fact, in an interview, one of Minnesota police spokesperson reiterated this point, saying police can only enforce laws and state laws, local and state laws. The strong state policy would provide clarity to retailers and law enforcement while ensuring Minnesota maximizes the health benefits. Specifically, this bill will help Minnesota make the most of Tobacco 21 by updating tobacco definitions to include the latest products on the market. It will update state compliance check requirements to include 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. It will increase transparency and compliance with state laws by making results to retailer compliance checks publicly available. It will update state penalties to follow current best practices and align with federal law. This includes removing tobacco purchase, use, and possession penalties for all persons under 21, strengthening fines for tobacco licensees who violate the law. Finally, this bill requires clear signage and ID checks for those under 30. And second, I want to explain what the fiscal note is for. The fiscal note is based on changes made in Section 7 of this bill. We have a strong locally driven compliance and enforcement system in Minnesota. Local law enforcement, public health, and other partners work with tobacco retailers to make sure they are aware of and the following state and local tobacco laws. Locals complete one compliance check with a retailer across the state. Section 7 of my bill outlines a new piece of that process. It requires locals to report to DHS the results of those compliance checks so that we have a statewide system to know about enforcement and accountability. DHS estimates that this fiscal note you'll see in your packet, members, is $30,000 each year to compile the information. It's an important piece to ensure Minnesota continues to have a strong compliance and enforcement system and a productive partnership with retailers. So that is it, and I'm happy to take members' questions.
All right, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple questions on the, so you're increasing the fines in this bill as well. Is that reflected in the revenue in the fiscal note?
Representative Abelson.
No, the fiscal note specifically only covers, Chair and Representative Munson, the fiscal note covers specific to the compliance only.
Representative Munson.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And do you have, do you have any estimates on the increase in revenue from the increase in fines?
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, I guess, and Representative Munson, I guess it would depend on how many retailers are selling to under the people under 21. So I guess it would be hard to predict that. I guess I could ask my testifier if she knows.
And I'm going to ask Mr. Berg if he can comment on that.
Madam Chair, Representative Munson, this fiscal note did not, I mean, it's referred, as you see, to Human Services and revenue, and they did not put anything in for new fines. Last year's fiscal note in the Senate was referred out to the courts and public safety, and they also did not book any revenue from fines. There is no assumption that there would be additional fine revenue in that fiscal note. This one actually was not referred out to the courts or to public safety, but there's still no assumption of additional revenue from fines.
So, Representative Munson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess it's the fines are being substantially increased, so I would expect additional revenue for that. One of the questions I have in your bill, Representative, is I guess I don't know if I'm looking at the original bill before it was amended on line 3.28, where you're prohibiting. On the amendment on line 1.2, saying that. Persons under 21 years of age cannot enter a tobacco shop at any time. And I just wanted to ask, clarify a question, is that I mean, I'm not trying to hand out Parent of the Year awards, but if someone was to go to a gas station and want to go in to purchase tobacco, where they have a separate, I think in St. Paul even, they have separate retail stores attached to the gas station, is it then that the parent has to leave a young child in a car unattended, or is that the intent that they can't be alone without a parent, or you're prohibiting any children at any time from entering a tobacco shop?
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, yeah, I'm going to let my testifier answer that. I mean, I have a guess on it, but I think you know.
Okay, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Amanda Jansen, and I'm with Clearway, Minnesota. The definition in here of a tobacco product shop is a very specific type of business that does not necessarily include a convenience store. So tobacco product shop has to get 90% of their revenue from tobacco sales, and that's where we're changing the age to 21 to enter a tobacco product shop specifically.
Representative Monson.
Okay, and I'm sure, to the testifier, I'm sorry, I don't know your name, but the ordinance in St. Paul requires any tobacco shop that sells flavored tobacco to be separate from the convenience store. You can't sell menthol cigarettes in a retail store, or in a convenience store. So they have built separate stores, either standalone or attached to the convenience store. There's one just blocks from here at the Holiday Station. And I just want to make sure that this law is going to force parents who are with young children to have to leave them unattended in the car to go into a tobacco shop. There isn't tobacco being consumed in the store. It's not like there's a health risk to children, you know, a six-year-old walking into the store with their parent. But as it's written here, it appears it would prohibit children from entering a tobacco store or a standalone store like the stores that sell just tobacco. Again, I'm not advocating parents bring young children to liquor stores or tobacco stores, but I understand when you do have young children in tow that I don't understand what you're asking them to do. I just want some clarifying question because, I, first of all, to recognize that there are tobacco stores in St. Paul and I'm sure around the state that are separate than the convenience stores, but how would you like them to comply with the law?
Representative Adelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Munson, I guess that we can defer to House Research on this. I guess, you know, what I would imagine this is mimicking, but I want clarity around it, is if you go into a liquor store, somebody under age 21 can't just go into a liquor store. If I go in with my, you know, child and I'm going to buy a bottle of wine, obviously I'm going to bring my child with me. Now, I imagine that would be the same with the tobacco facility, but I guess if we could get some clarification from staff on that.
Ms. Barkvist?
Madam Chair and members, I actually don't know what the law says around liquor stores. I read this requirement, just reading the terms, it says that cannot be entered any time by a person under 21 years of age. It doesn't have an exception unless it's accompanied by a parent or responsible adult.
Okay. And while we're... But to that point, Representative Halverson.
Yes, Madam Chair, and perhaps Representative Edelson or the testifier could clarify. I believe that some of these shops actually allow for sampling of products, so there actually is tobacco use happening on the premises, and so that might clarify why the law is written the way it is.
Ms. Jansen?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Halverson. That is right. There are some tobacco product shops where they do allow sampling, specifically in the e-cigarette space. I also want to say, Representative Munson, to your other question, in St. Paul, the shops that are popping up, they have to have a separate entrance. So it's not like you go through the convenience store to go to the tobacco product shop. So you have to actively decide, I'm going to go into the convenience store or I'm going to go into the tobacco product shop. So they are two separate entities. But yes, Representative Halverson, sampling is absolutely something that we're concerned about in these stores too.
Yeah, and before we go back to Representative Munson, I just want to give Mr. Berg a chance to update his answer on the fines issue.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Munson, Ms. Clarkquist reminded me, in addition to the fact that there's no assumption for revenue in here, that the reason being that the licenses here are local, and so the fine revenue would go to the local entity, not to the state, and so therefore it wouldn't show up in any fiscal note anyway.
Okay. Representative Munson.
Yeah, thank you. Representative, I also would ask that, and I don't, maybe this is against the law, I can ask maybe research, but A 19-year-old college student that's working at a convenience store could also be working at a tobacco shop unless they're prohibited by law from working. I don't know if somebody could answer me that, but there's no provision that would allow somebody who's, you know, 19 or 20 years old from working in the store. This would actually prohibit them from entering the store.
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Munson, the ages for working at those establishments, my understanding is it's decided at the local level.
Okay, then, Madam Chair,
Representative Munson.
I see a conflict then if the local level allows someone who's 18 years old to work there or 19 years old, then if this law went into effect, they would essentially lose their job at a convenience store. I know that unemployment rate is pretty low. It's hard to find workers, but I'd like to maybe exempt children in the custody of a responsible adult and employees of the store. That would be an amendment, I guess, I would recommend. I don't know if we can do that today or if that's something that you'd want to do later on.
Representative Edelson.
Chair, Representative Munson. You know, I'll look at that language. I do see what you're saying and how that could be, how it could cause confusion. So I will absolutely look at that.
Okay. And so this bill's going to Ways and Means, and, you know, there could certainly be a clarification, technical, that kind of amendment, I think, could be done in Ways and Means. And, so I don't know if we want to start doing that on the fly today, because it seems like the kind of thing that would take some thought. Representative Munson.
Madam Chair, has this been through Commerce, or has it not stopped there?
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Munson, yes, it went through Commerce last year. It went through HHS policy. It went through Judiciary.
Okay. And, Madam Chair, I'd like to shame them publicly for not correcting them because it went through Commerce. So, thank you.
Okay. Never any downside to doing that. Okay. So any further questions from members? Anything at all about the fiscal note? Okay. Seeing none, final words, Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair and members, last year we fought really hard. I want to acknowledge all the people from Clearway and all the students that came to the Capitol. We fought, Representative Baker, I know you were on it, Representative Haley, I think you were. We worked so hard to get this passed into law, and unfortunately it didn't go. Thank you to the president for passing it, but we do need to adopt this into state law, and I ask committee members support regardless of political party. Our kids have been targeted, and I ask you to stand with me in getting this passed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. So I will renew the motion that House File 331 as amended be recommended for re-referral to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much. And now we have Representative Halverson, House File 1058. So Representative Halverson is going to move that House File 1058 be recommended for re-referral to Ways and Means. And I understand that there is an amendment. So we have a DE1 amendment. Oh, no, wait, sorry. Did I get the right thing? Yes, it is. Okay. All right. So, oh, no, wait. This is wrong. Okay. All right. So we have the DE1 amendments in our packet. Representative Halverson, did you want to move that now?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move the DE1 amendment.
Okay, so Representative Halverson moves the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape in which she would like to discuss it. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. So now we have the DE1 in front of us, and go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Appreciate the time and really appreciate getting to follow the conversation with Representative Edelson. As everybody can see, the shape of tobacco policy is really changing in our state and in our country, and have really been heartened to see all the bipartisan work that we've done to keep kids from getting addicted to tobacco. The amendment, just so you know, was needed to update Section 1 of the bill to amend the 2019 supplemental legislation, and since it was amended in 2019. And then there was an A1 amendment that was adopted to this bill in finance last year, so we're just cleaning it everything up, and all the changes are reflected in here from last year. So thank you for accepting that amendment. This bill is, as you know, one of a number of proposals introduced this biennium to invest more resources in reversing the youth cigarette epidemic and reducing the number one cause of preventable death and disease in our state, which is tobacco addiction. Since last year, we know that the e-cigarette epidemic has not improved. In fact, it's gotten worse. More and more kids are addicted to tobacco and nicotine products. This committee heard this bill last year, and it was included in the chair's omnibus bill, which we are grateful for. Unfortunately, it did not make it into the final budget, so I appreciate this opportunity to bring it forward again and get a chance to really highlight for you that we can't waste any time. We're losing ground to big tobacco. In your packets, you should have a handout with a graph. I should have a handout with a graph. There it is. That really talks about why, in large part, why this bill is important. One side shows the state's declining investment in tobacco control, and the other side shows the state's investment compared to the amount of money the state brings in from tobacco taxes and settlement fees. The state spends less than 1% of tobacco tax and settlement revenues on prevention. We can do better, and we need to do better. Last year, we were successful in securing funding for smoking cessation efforts, so there won't be a gap in services in Minnesota for folks who are looking to quit. However, there will be a tremendous gap when it comes to funding prevention if we don't take action, and my bill proposes that we fill this gap. As part of the historic Minnesota tobacco settlement in 1998, tobacco companies agreed to pay settlement fees to the state in perpetuity. However, in 2015, a couple of these folks, Reynolds and Lorillard specifically, merged and transferred certain major brands, including Kool, Maverick, Salem, Winston, to another company called ITG Brands LLC. Since that time, settlement payments have not been made on these popular brands. The state of Minnesota filed a lawsuit against Reynolds and ITG Brands, and in September, the Ramsey County District Court ordered RJ Reynolds to pay Minnesota its unpaid tobacco settlement commitments. Basically, there was money out there that was supposed to be coming to the state of Minnesota as a payment for these settlements, and these folks decided not to pay it. The courts will decide later this year whether ITG Brands is also liable for the settlement payments on their brands, and then the parties have a right to appeal. So some time is going to pass, but suffice it to say that we're moving in a direction where we are finally going to be able to recoup some of this money that was held back from the state of Minnesota from the settlement. And my bill, House File 1058, states that if and when, and I'm going to lean heavily on when, the state receives this tobacco settlement money from these delinquent cigarette companies, that a portion of these revenues, $12 million a year, is dedicated to health and addressing the harms caused by tobacco use now into the future. That specific amount in the bill is a conservative estimate of the settlement amount attributable to the transferred brands. The $12 million figure was actually provided by counsel for the state based on annual calculations of a third party, PricewaterhouseCoopers, or Pricewaterhouse. I watch the Academy Awards too much. They've changed their names. The CDC recommends that the state of Minnesota spend $53 million annually on prevention and cessation, and we don't even come close. And when you look at what tobacco companies continue to pour into the state in terms of advertising and trying to get these products in front of our kids, we need to make funding tobacco prevention a major priority. As I mentioned earlier, we dedicate only 1% of the current settlement values for cigarette taxes and cigarette taxes to this purpose. So $12 million is a good start, but it's not enough. In addition, Clearway Minnesota, which is an organization founded with tobacco settlement proceeds, is going to sunset next year. Sunsetting because we really thought we were going to be ahead of this problem, and now we're losing ground to tobacco companies. We've seen the first increase in youth tobacco smoking rates and tobacco use in 20 years. So there really is a sense of urgency that the state get involved. That's why I'm encouraged to see our state taking action against those tobacco companies who have not paid their share through this lawsuit. And I want to encourage everybody to make sure that we are smart with these proceeds and we invest them where they need to be invested so that we can prevent future healthcare costs with regard to tobacco use and prevent future suffering and addiction of our kids. The fact is that tobacco prevention works when we invest in it. And you look at the smoking rates that we've seen in Minnesota, and we have had a lot of success. We can't stop now. And so I urge the committee to support this bill, to dedicate the tobacco settlement fees that have been held back from these cigarette companies to tobacco prevention efforts where they belong. It's a promise that we made to the youth of Minnesota, and we need to uphold our promise. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. So members will note that there is no fiscal note with this bill, and I would just turn to Mr. Berg and ask him to tell us why.
Madam Chair, members, this, as Representative Halverson said, this bill was around from last year as well, and there's been extensive contact with the Minnesota Management and Budget, and while they have some concerns about getting the language right so that we only catch up the money which is at issue in this lawsuit, the funds that are at issue here are not currently in the forecast because the company stopped paying, and so we don't have this money on the books now, and the issue of when or if we prevail in the lawsuit and then when the money would actually hit the state budget is very hypothetical. And so there's no way to look at this in a saying this is money that otherwise would hit the general fund. So MMB is not opposing this as saying there doesn't need to be a fiscal note because we're in advance allocating what will happen to some money that a lawsuit the state is involved in hopes we will get at some point. It's not allocating money that is current.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
thank
I would
you,
say that
Halverson.
Planning is vitally important, and so we are doing some important pre-planning here so that we're not right. taken by surprise.
All right, very good. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, we definitely want to keep children off addictive products. I noticed that, is the money coming out of the general fund then, or Mr. Berg said something about a lawsuit, so is the money going to come out even if the lawsuit's not settled, or how does that work?
Representative Halverson.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, the money is only dispersed from the lawsuit settlement, so it's from the tobacco companies to a special fund for tobacco prevention. So it does not go into...
He didn't seem to agree.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Berg can answer.
Madam Chair, the dedication of the state's tobacco settlement money ended a long time ago. The state gets currently $157 million a year in unrestricted revenue that's dumped into the general fund, and it's not dedicated for anything. This, however, is money that would have been part of that 157, or that would have been added on top of it, except the company stopped paying. Now, in this case, Representative Halverson's bill is going to say when we get this money, it's segregated over at health for tobacco cessation purposes. But the existing tobacco settlement money we get is just in the general fund to be used for any purpose.
And
Representative Halverson.
Madam Chair, that was what I intended to communicate, and I'm sorry if I did not communicate it clearly, but this is money that is owed to the state that has not been paid and has been held back. So it is not going to the general fund. It would go into this.
Okay. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Halverson, did I hear you correctly? Or did I misunderstand? Yes. Are we losing the battle of young people being addicted to tobacco?
Representative Halverson.
Madam Chair and Representative Gruenhagen, we are at great risk for a state that has invested as much in health and led as much as any state in the nation to prevent youth access to tobacco. We have seen the first increase in the number of youth addicted to tobacco, using tobacco products for the first time in 20 years. So that should scare us all. As a mom of a 12-year-old, I'm not ready for it to become normal again for everybody to experiment with tobacco.
Okay, Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and so my question is there any comparative data with the programs that we're using versus, you know, this tobacco settlement went, I think, all across the nation? And are other states experiencing better results in terms of decrease of youth tobacco use than what we're experiencing here? And if so, are they using a different program? And maybe that's, I don't know if that you can answer that or not.
Representative Gruenhagen, you are asking one of our foremost experts, but I'm not sure if she has all of that kind of information at her fingertips. Maybe Representative Halverson, you're welcome to try to answer, but maybe somebody from Clearway is still here and would like to take a crack at that.
Well, and Madam Chair, it's a little outside the scope of the bill, but I think that it's really important that we look at what we're doing and what works. The reason that Minnesota is losing ground is not because the work we're doing isn't effective. It's because there's a whole new slate of addictive products that have come onto the market and created an epidemic of youth vaping. We have products now that in a stick, you know, the size of a long thumb drive, which you've seen, you can get three packs of cigarettes worth of nicotine in. And so it is not for lack of trying, but when you are battling a product that is addictive, when you're battling a product that has been marketed, you know, specifically to children by advertising on sites like Nickelodeon that your kids are spending time on and grown-ups aren't, we've got a formidable adversary, and I, for one, am not ready to give up the health gains that we've made to tobacco companies. And so anything we can do to invest is important.
So, Ms. Moylan, and welcome to the committee. Did you hear the question?
I did, Madam Chair.
Okay, if you would just tell us your name.
I'm Molly Moylan and with Clearway, Minnesota, and I did hear the question, and it's a good question. And I just want to reinforce what Representative Halverson said. We have a youth e-cigarette epidemic that's not only here in Minnesota, but it is across the country. Last year, the U.S. Surgeon General, the current administration's Surgeon General, called this a national crisis because they saw the biggest increase in any drug use across the country recorded in the past 40 years, since they started doing the drug assessment. Minnesota is not alone. Now, if we didn't have the type of programs and awareness campaigns and strong public health policies that we do in Minnesota, our youth e-cigarette epidemic and crisis here in Minnesota could be higher. It would be higher. Other states that haven't been as thoughtful and upfront on these issues as Minnesota have, thanks to the great work done by the legislature, as well as the programs from the Department of Health and the local level. If those weren't in existence, and some of them aren't in other states, we are seeing higher increases in those states. So I think we're at a really unique period in time where we have seen just in the past really 2 years this spike. It's not because everyone wasn't doing their job or fell asleep at the wheel at the legislature or local public health. The impact of Juul could not be anticipated. Once we saw that this electronic delivery device can deliver nicotine to the brain faster, as fast as a cigarette, we knew it was a new ball game. So we're trying to get ahead of it, and this is one way to do it.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to go to Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A bunch of my questions were answered in this previous conversation, but I still wanted to know, fiscal year 19, we spent $6 million in spending for these initiatives. Two questions. You had mentioned $53 million is needed to battle this danger that we're all facing, and you don't have to go far to know that it's such a serious threat in our high schools and out in the community. But what will be spent in the next year or two? I know it's dependent upon what comes in, but are we going to at least spend $6 million if we don't get the settlement money that you're in the 12 you're asking for? And, you know, where or how do we change where these settlement payment money goes if we do get the money and we need more than $12 million to really address this issue? And my last question is, what is the highest amount of money we ever spent in Minnesota against cessation?
So, Representative Halverson.
Or force.
Tobacco jeopardy, Madam Chair. I do not have the answer to all those questions, but I think they're really good questions, and I think that and we can do some more analysis, and I'll see if Ms. Moylanen has some additional details.
Ms. Moylanen?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. So in fiscal year 19, that $6 million was two parts. One is the Department of Health's current spending on tobacco-free communities programs, which is an annual appropriation of $3.2 million. And then you'll see in the orange, it was also from the Minnesota Department of Health. The SHIP grant program also had money that was used for tobacco prevention. So those two pieces together for fiscal year 19 is what was the $6 million on the other side of the chart. So you'll see in fiscal year 20, because the Department of Health now oversees the cessation programs as well, that's in the red part of the chart on the other side of the graph. And you can see that what is declining is the blue part at the bottom, which is Clearway Minnesota's contribution, because we are a life-limited organization and we are sunsetting next year. So you can see our budget and contribution to tobacco prevention in the state has declined and will end. And then what is left right now is really just tobacco-free community program, the 3.2 annual appropriation to Department of Health, some SHIP dollars, as well as cessation that was first funded last year. The other question about what has our highest contribution been, and I don't know for sure, but I would estimate was around fiscal year 2008, where it was about $23 million overall between all parties contributing to tobacco prevention. It was right during the time where bars and restaurants were moving to have smoke-free spaces, right around that time.
President Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it's a pretty dramatic hill we're facing. So a great bill just to get this on the books, but we're going to need to keep working on this in terms that are enhanced and on all sides of the issue. So thanks for bringing it forward.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Halverson, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I'm a father of a 12-year-old, so I have the same concerns about smoking in the state. What Representative Grunhagen was talking about and the amount of smokers in Minnesota. I believe the number of smokers have declined, but this vaping epidemic has just taken off, and I would agree with you on that one. I do have a question since we're a finance committee. A special revenue fund that you're creating, is this going to sit, and this is probably a question for Mr. Berg, is this going to sit inside the general fund, or is this going to be another one of those special revenue funds that's not part of our budget that sits outside and can be susceptible to all this trickery of money going in and out?
Mr. Berg?
Madam Chair, Representative Munson, if you look on page 2 of the amendment on section 2, it creates a tobacco use prevention account in the state special revenue fund. And then it in subdivision 2 goes on to specify the uses for that. So that, I mean, it would not be in the general fund, it would be in the special revenue fund, and then the money's only available for the specified uses.
Okay.
Thank you. Munson.
And last year I offered legislation to take the tobacco settlement and all this tobacco tax and actually put it into the healthcare access fund so we could do good with it as opposed to just throwing it into the general fund. And I, you know, received a lot of opposition from, you know, educators and stuff, that's part of the general fund money, and they're concerned anytime somebody goes after it to use it, what I think is what its intended purpose should be, which is smoking cessation and people's health. So I agree with putting some of this money into a program to be used for smoking cessation. I think that's good. One of the questions I have is what percentage of this money is the Commissioner of Health going to charge to administer this program? Do you have any costs for that?
Well, Representative Munson, I think we're kind of way off the actual bill here, but Representative Halverson, any response to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Munson, no, for the reasons that Mr. Berg said, that this is a plan for what to do with the money when it's available, and we don't know what fiscal year it's going to be available. So we can't, put it in our state budget until we know it's available.
Okay. All right.
Representative, are you done?
I am done, yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Halverson. I share your concern for our kids, and I hear this often from not only parents and school superintendents, teachers, et cetera. It's alarming, as we all know, how fast this has happened. So I just have, again, a funding question. We know that Clearway will sunset, and I would presume then we're concerned about that based on our discussion, and we'll be looking for funding sources there. Is there a reason that you didn't include them in this bill, or maybe I'm not understanding the funding stream? Is this funding goes strictly to MDH, but then would MDH grant out, or are we talking two different, completely separate programs? Can you clarify for me?
Representative Halverson.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Haley, to the question about Clearway, that will sunset in 2021, which is next year. That still boggles my mind that it's 2021 next year. But and so that organization will be going away. Minnesota was very unique in the way we created our settlement. We weren't part of the National Master Settlement Agreement because we were a separate litigants. And Blue Cross and Blue Shield was part of the litigation along with the state of Minnesota. And in their infinite wisdom, they put money into entities that weren't accessible by government. And so we waited longer than a lot of states to balance our budget on tobacco proceeds. It ended up happening several years ago. But the fact is we've gotten to keep this going because we started Clearway Minnesota, and we also Blue Cross and Blue Shield with their settlement money started the Center for Prevention, which also does granting work through the private sector. So we're kind of unique in terms of other states and investments that we've made. But with regard to investment and timing, it is, again, a separate special revenue account that is managed by the state, separate from the general fund. And so the way that MDH gets to manage it and grant it is under their purview.
Representative Haley?
Thank you for the clarification.
And Madam Chair, I think that Ms. Moylan can expand on something.
Okay.
Just briefly, Madam Chair and Representative Haley, just want to reiterate that Clearway Minnesota will sunset in 2021. It has been our honor and pleasure to work with the state on this great mission, but we are in no way seeking funds to continue our organization in any way. This is strictly funds that the state would contribute to the state to do this work and carry it forward. But I want to be really clear about that we are not looking to expend our life in any way.
So sad. Yeah. Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Halverson, for all your work on this. I think a lot of people view the vaping industry and the traditional combustible tobacco industry as being kind of mutually exclusive. But I was wondering if either yourself, Representative Halverson, or testifier, I'm sorry, I forgot your last name, could tell us a little bit about, if you know kind of off the top of your head, about any major investments that traditional tobacco companies have made into Juul or any of these other vaping companies, just that we can really get a grasp for the scope of just how these industries are really one and the same.
Ms. Moylan in?
Well, I can start, and then, as usual, Ms. Moylan can fill in the gaps. But you are right to assume that, I mean, that without a doubt, the impact of Altria in particular and their partnership with Juul really did help spur this epidemic. Altria is a tobacco company that owns R.J. Reynolds and Philip Morris. And so some of the brands that you're most familiar with combustible cigarettes, invested heavily in Juul around the country and invested heavily in marketing to kids. They held camps. They did school-based activities. And they advertised on kid-friendly websites to make sure that kids knew what their products were. And then they marketed flavored tobacco products as well. Mm-hmm. So all in all, it's an industry that folks saw what the future was, right? Mm-hmm. We had all these tobacco smoking rates going down, and then people saw what the future was. And you had a product that worked so efficiently to hook kids in particular that we saw increase in smoking youth vaping rates of 95% among eighth graders. And the bathrooms at schools are called vaping rooms now. They're not, they're juuling rooms. And one of the most significant things for me, I've been working on regulating e-cigarettes since before it was acceptable. And because a lot of people thought, hey, maybe this is something that we can work with. Maybe this is not as dangerous as it sounds. Maybe they're not targeting kids as much as we hear they are. None of that turned out to be true. But what I will tell you is since 2014, and I started working on this when none of us around this table knew what an e-cigarette was, I said to the kids, I'm working on e-cigarette legislation. And anytime I have a school group here and I say I'm working on that, they all go, thank you, because they're on the front lines. Mm-hmm. And so it looked like big tobacco, the way that they were marketing their product, and it turns out it was.
Thank you. And I remember, too, quite a long time ago when you tried to move legislation to restrict vaping and so on, and you've been a real champion of that. And I just do want to say I'm going to go to Representative Munson again. But when I said sad with regard to the fact that you're sunsetting, I wasn't being sarcastic at all. I mean, I think it is very sad because Clearway's been just a wonderful, wonderful group here and in the state. So, I'm really a little bit looking forward with trepidation to, I know we've put in some resources and we're going to forge onward, but, I know that Clearway's going to be greatly missed in this whole effort. So, Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Halverson, if you could look on the third page of your DE on line 3.5, the word tobacco, wouldn't it be better to substitute the word nicotine? Because I'm just concerned that vaping products are, not tobacco products. I know that maybe it's defined in statute somewhere, but really we were trying to prevent the use of nicotine, and that seems like that would allow the Department of Health to have a broader scope of programs, or is that, I guess I'm just kind of curious to see what your objection would be to change that word. And I'm not making a formal amendment, but
Yeah, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Munson. You're going to get to see another bill of mine, I think, coming up soon that actually has the state's definition of tobacco products in it, and you'll see how extensive it is and how much we've worked to expand and make sure it's comprehensive. And so when we say tobacco in statute, it means something very specific. And there's I leaned over. I said, do you have a statute reference off the top of your head? And she said, I don't think so, but I bet she does. and so it is in statute, and it is broadly defined, and you'll get to see it in another piece of legislation.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. So seeing no further questions, so Representative Halverson is going to renew her motion that House File 1058, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moylan. Appreciate your stepping in. And then, members, before we adjourn, I just want to let you know the next meeting tomorrow, we're going to be hearing from the Department of Health and also from the Minnesota Hospital Association about our efforts around COVID-19, otherwise known as the coronavirus. So I'm looking forward to that. And so we'll be talking about the state's efforts to be sure that we are fully prepared. So with that, members, we are adjourned.